This is Paul Daner Jr. and Mo Egger in studio talking all things Bengals and general NFL topics on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
Hey, what's up? Good afternoon. I'm Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you're having a great Tuesday. We are loaded today. Is Keyshawn Johnson on today, 4:33? That has become, I hear from people who say that's their favorite part of the week. I hear from folks who say that's their least favorite part of the week. That means the segment's good. I'm looking forward to it. You'll hear Luke Fickell at 4:20 today. Cincinnati coming off their scare against Navy and getting set to play Tulane. We have the World Series tonight, which does air games 1 and 2. We'll air on ESPN 1530. I'm not going to tell you about games 3, 4, and if necessary, 5, 6, and 7, but I can tell you games 1 and 2 will air live on ESPN 1530. We are pretty loaded this afternoon. Of course, it's a Tuesday, which means our guy from The Athletic covers the Bengals, Paul Daner Jr. He and Jay Morrison have as comprehensive coverage as you're going to find. They write, they podcast. Paul's written some really good things in the aftermath of the win against the Baltimore Ravens. Hear that podcast. Growlin' is their podcast. Is the episode with me on it today, is that up?
It is up.
It is up? Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Well, you can check that out.
You can check
that
out.
If you can't get enough of me and Paul together, there it is, except Jay is a part of that. So there you go.
Yeah. Do you get credit for games 1 and 2 being aired on ESPN 1530?
No.
Like a hat tip? Did you essentially, your words, strong-arm somebody into?
No.
No.
I don't know why we haven't aired any playoff games to this point. we're airing games 1 and 2 of the World Series, so we have that to look forward to this evening. After the Scott Satterfield show, the Louisville football coach, after that, we'll join it right before first pitch of the Fall Classic tonight.
I look forward to that.
There you go. God, where do we even
begin? Where do you
begin?
Start?
Yeah, that's
what do you do, Mo? What do you do is the question when
me?
The news is only positive.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
No, I don't mean like, I just, as a show, it's mm-hmm. such a different, what a different world to be in, to be hosting this show when you have a team, a college team ranked number 2 in the country, yeah. and this Bengals team that is blowing expectations out of the water. It's such a different experience.
For me, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things you hear often is they'll say, like, you know, well, and there's this belief in this industry, not necessarily by anybody here, that when the teams are bad, people are pissed off and they're angry, and that's good. And that's true for a very short amount of time. But eventually people move on to something else. They don't want something that's going to make them feel bad. They get tired of the same old things, and so they leave. When the team is good, look, you might not have people complaining about as much stuff, although some will certainly try. But you have more people interested. You have more people excited. And for me, like I've said this about this team in particular. We've spent the most of the last 5 years not really talking about football. I like talking about football. I didn't get into this business because I wanted to spend all my time complaining and screaming that the coach should be fired, or are they going to move the team, or how much everybody hates the owner. I got into this because I like talking about sports and games and teams, and we're doing that now. That, to me, is amazingly refreshing.
It was kind of fun on last Thursday's episode. I was like, this is maybe a bit of a departure for us.
Yeah.
But we're going to really focus on the game.
Yeah.
And it's such a weird thing because
right.
you go through so many years of you got to kind of dive further and further into all the big picture off the field
right.
things of how do you get this thing right and culture and all these things. And now you can spend a lot of time on the X's and O's because of the insane relevance that they have.
Yeah.
And I think we'll be doing that the rest of this year.
Well, and it's interesting because a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the role of coaching with the offense, right? Why were they spinning their tires? Why were they going through these long lulls despite winning some games? And I got some pushback. Hey, come on, they're winning. What are you doing? And I go, no, no, no. This is the next step. Now, quarterback's in place. Feels like that the pieces are in place. Now, we talk about the team and the games and strategies, and that's not always going to be, you know, gumdrops and rainbows. Hopefully it is. But, yeah, we talk about, okay, what can the team do now to be even better? We weren't doing that last year. We weren't doing that 2 years ago. God knows we weren't doing that the previous 3 years. We're doing that now. And again, from my individual standpoint, that is an insane amount of fun. So sign me up for it every single year.
Yeah, and I mean, you start thinking about – where this team is going, man. And I don't – we did a whole podcast today where I said, here's what we need to do. We need to reset the – let's reset the season here. Let's reset. Mm-hmm. Expectations have changed. The timeline has changed. What we should be talking about has changed. We can say that now. And when you look at it, I mean, they can end up in a place where we should be talking about what do they need to do to get the number one seat?
Mm-hmm.
How does the rest of this year play out? The sustainability of where they're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these things, you got to kind of reset the season and your expectations and say, you know, to kind of quote CJ Uzama, you know, they say, why not us? I mean, why not them at this point in an AFC that is wide open and some of the heavy hitters all stumbling over themselves? You suddenly see this team in the middle of the conversation and understand this type of chemistry, this type of start, this type of health, this type of situation that you're in right now does not come along all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, sometimes only comes on for 1 year and then things go sideways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've seen that here pretty much always.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to kind of say, yeah, it feels earlier than you thought it would be, but time to reset the expectations and understand the time is now to take advantage of this, because not always do you have yourself in a situation as good as the one they're in right now.
Yeah, and so let's talk about Sunday, because I spent some time last week talking about this team's playoff chances. And I said, look, if they beat the Ravens, this is going to kick this conversation into hyperdrive. But why do we have to wait? And for me, the sort of the crux of it was based on, look at this conference. We can eliminate four or five teams already. Some of the teams that have fewer wins than Cincinnati, how many of them do you trust to get to 10? And then look at this team and tell me where they're woefully deficient. Not where they couldn't use some help, not where they couldn't use some retooling, but where are they woefully deficient? And they have the quarterback, and he's trending upward. And so then you sort of wrote something, and I even put on Twitter on Sunday morning, you were far more articulate in expressing that sentiment than I was, and it was basically, hey, look, this feels different. This is worth buying into. This is something that's starting to turn. And then you pick the Bengals to win with an Evan McPherson field goal at the gun. That obviously is not what they needed to
win.
How
bad did I look?
Yeah, you whiffed. So, but here's the thing. So they won the game 41-17. And if you would have written, or if I would have said, the Bengals are going to go to Baltimore and win by 24 points, we'd have been laughed at. You and I both know. Yet, and it's easy to say this in the aftermath of the game, I walked away from that game on Sunday going, you know, this is surprising. I think it's always surprising when you win by more than three touchdowns in the NFL, especially in the division. At the same time, this is a Baltimore team that had been walking a tightrope for weeks. Played really well last week, but had been walking a tightrope for weeks. It is a Bengals offense that is seemingly getting better every single week. They're healthy. The defense had been playing well. What Baltimore had, Cincinnati had a counter for. Hey, they're going to blitz. Burrow's great against the blitz. Well, they got a shutdown corner. Yeah, but Ja'Marr Chase is a special talent. Hey, it's Lamar Jackson. Yeah, the Bengals defensively are better equipped to slow down Lamar Jackson, and they've got some injuries on offense. All of those things added up. Before the game, I think you could have made the case. Cincinnati could win this game convincingly. Nobody was willing to do that, myself included. But when things unfolded the way they did, I walked away from that and said, maybe we should have seen this coming.
They lost the turnover battle. I mean, they were the better team.
Yeah.
It was nothing they did was superhuman necessarily, although someone might argue that about Ja'Marr Chase at this point.
Yeah, I would.
Nothing they did was anything you hadn't seen them do this year. They put a full game together, but teams do that. And it wasn't like they got a million great breaks. They lost the coin toss, Mo.
I know. It's over.
It was hurtful.
New streak starts Sunday.
But, you know, the point being, though, this was not a collection of lucky bounces and some total random stuff.
It wasn't Dalvin Cook fumbling.
No.
It wasn't Mason Crosby missing a bunch of field goals.
This was just a clinical destruction of the other team and everything the other team wants to do, and a team that had won five games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what you think about their IR or who they are or whatever as a team, you know, this was not some luck. You know, you see these things typically, it happens where one turnover happens or a pick six or a special teams thing and you get a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
Just beat them up.
Yeah.
They just beat them up, and it didn't look out of the ordinary for just what they were doing in the to the eye test. And I just think that's really the scary part about this team that gives you even more reason to believe is, that's just kind of who they are. They're a team without a lot of weaknesses at this point. Mm-hmm. And when you play in a league where everybody goes through attrition, you exploit other teams' weaknesses. And they're doing it kind of week in and week out right now.
Yeah. No, I mean, for back-to-back weeks, for Brandon Allen to finish the game, and that come at the end of lopsided Bengals victories, is not something before the season that any of us ever would have entertained, and yet it happened in consecutive weeks, which is nothing shy of remarkable. But, yeah, I walked away from that game, and I put it on Twitter. The better team won. This wasn't fluky.
No.
This wasn't Baltimore played bad and let a bad team in. That happens all the time in this league. We've seen it happen with the Bengals. This was the better, healthier, more loaded offensively team, went to Baltimore and toyed with the opponent in the second half.
And answered some nice questions by the Ravens. I mean, when the Ravens get the deep ball to Hollywood Brown, yeah. Here we go, right? Mm-hmm. The Ravens are doing their thing, Lamar. Then it's like, even though the Bengals take the lead, they leave a couple opportunities for Lamar to charge back in and do what he's done a bunch of times this year. And they just shut it down.
Yeah.
They just shut it down, and then they put him away. And the Ravens basically are waving the white flag on that Samaje Perine run where they just push everybody back 10 yards past line of scrimmage, and they got guys barely even trying. So now you have a game at Pittsburgh and a game at Baltimore where the Bengals took both teams behind the woodshed, mm-hmm. and both teams waved the white flag. Tyler Boyd spoke with the media yesterday. The only difference was this time he didn't point out what we all knew. They quit. They quit. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Ravens were done, and everybody did. Everybody put in all their backups and said it was over. And when you do that, I don't care how the division is constituted. I don't care how either team is doing at this point. You went into both of those houses, perennial leaders, bullies of this division, and just took it to them. There's no other way to see it other than time to reset the expectations for what this season can be.
No question about that. Follow Paul on Twitter, at Paul Daner Jr. I want to talk to you about what you wrote about Ja'Marr Chase and this offense. And we are just about a week away from the NFL's trade deadline. So now we can talk about how the Bengals might get better, what they may do with the deadline. And it's not just unloading guys for the sake of unloading them. These are conversations that I've been looking forward to having. I also need your take on the Brady ball because it's the biggest topic in the NFL right now.
Is it really?
Yes, the Brady ball.
Okay.
Yes, I need your take. You're not allowed to do this without having a take on the Brady ball. Yeah.
Okay.
Did you get the memo?
I didn't. I'll put one together during the break.
Great. 17 minutes after 3 o'clock, Reed Paul. He's in The Athletic. He's here till 4, you and I till 6. This is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. 22 minutes after 3, this is ESPN 1530 Mo Egger. Paul Daner Jr. is here from The Athletic. He's with us every single Tuesday. Read his work in theathletic.com. Really quick, what do you think? Because, a year ago at this time, I'm reading about how Zach Taylor's losing the locker room, and I'm writing about how he's like David Shula and things like that. If Zach was being honest, because we're all now taking victory laps on dumb things people said about the Bengals, mm-hmm. Zach has handled all of the criticism that he is absorbed over his first two seasons, publicly at least, very, very well. He hasn't snapped at people in listening to his interactions with you guys. He has been affable most of the time. But he's taken a lot of hits, and some fair and maybe many of them not so fair. If he's being honest, how do you think he is reacting to the success his team is having right now in the face of what a lot of people said and wrote about him?
I'm 100%, and I think I know him decently. Mm-hmm. I don't think he looks at it as some victory lap for himself. I really don't.
Because I would be petty.
Right. not like you and I would handle this.
Hold up the Dave Shula piece.
No.
There's others that I would hold up to.
I think he does a pretty good job of blocking out all that stuff. I think he tries to stay insular of just coach my team, work on doing things that I think should be done a certain way. the right way, and I don't. So I don't think that there's a proving the doubters wrong element to the way he views it.
Yeah,
I just think he's just grateful because he wants to be the coach of this team.
But it is remarkable.
But I think he understood the criticism. Like, I think he understands and was totally okay with, like, yeah, you lose games, you should be getting crushed, and I'm not going to listen to all of that. But I'm not going to sit here and go out there to try and shut up people that were crushing me. And so I just think it's kind of a – he just wants to coach the football team, you know?
You wrote about the day that Ja'Marr Chase had. And there's a greater point to all this that you reference. You wrote, defenses now have to play pick your poison. Want Ja'Marr Chase, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here. Want him to beat you over the top, underneath, not at all. Prefer to deal with stopping Mixon with fewer defenders, leaving Boyd and Higgins singled. These are the decisions defensive coordinators have to make. And I want folks to read it because it is a really good illustration as to exactly, precisely what Ja'Marr Chase did against Baltimore, but it does highlight the conundrum for this league moving forward. I don't know how you defend these guys.
I don't either. And here's in kind of a portion of the story, but really the big picture is Ja'Marr Chase did more than just like post a 201 on the Ravens. Mm-hmm. He changed the way he's viewed because he posted a 201 not doing the thing he's done best this year thus far.
Yeah.
He's been the deep ball guy. And he's done other stuff a little bit.
Sure.
But you knew eventually teams are just going to do whatever they can to make sure you can't run over the top of them. And the Ravens were clearly aware of that. Very focused on that. Just like we all said, at what point is somebody in the last minute of the first half going to stop letting this guy do this? Well, the Ravens said, we're not going to let you. What did he do? Back shoulder slant underneath and accomplish the exact same thing with ease. Mm-hmm. Now, it was impressive. I don't know if it wasn't made that easy to do, but he made it look easy.
Yeah.
Against Marlon Humphrey.
Yeah.
And to me, that's when everyone throws their hands up and says, I don't know what to do now. Mm-hmm. So the only thing you can do is you assume you're going to start to see more double teams, more direct clouds with the safety right over top. And what does that mean? That means you're pulling a linebacker out or pulling, you know, the idea of dropping that safety down in to come in and stop a Joe Mixon. And you're definitely leaving Tyler Boyd all alone, mm-hmm, and T. Higgins all alone. And is that safe? I just think there's a number of ways that they can beat you. And the fact that he did it that way, it just changes the way that you think that maybe you could slow down Ja'Marr Chase. Mm-hmm. Because nobody, there might be one or two teams that will watch that and be like, well, I got a better corner than Marlon Humphrey to do this with.
Not many.
And nobody on the schedule.
Right.
So I just think it's the evolution you hoped. He has absolutely changed the offense, but he had changed it in a different way than he did Sunday,
right.
And now it's when it really becomes scary on a big picture level.
Yeah, I mean, he unloaded the bag, mm-hmm, against Baltimore. And now if I'm any of these teams they're playing, and I'm going to sit down and try to come up with some sort of schematic advantage against the Bengals, and the obvious answer is going to be, I guess, for a lot of people, well, you got to put a lot of pressure on Joe Burrow. Number one, he was phenomenal against pressure. He showed pocket awareness that just sort of defied his still relative lack of experience. And this offensive line is playing well. I mean, you know, so now you're going to try to beat them by rushing four. The way they're playing, the way he's playing, and the way that unit is gelling, good luck with that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, the line as a whole has been definitely okay.
Yes.
And that's what
this
we talked about.
This was the blueprint, yeah.
This was what you talked about.
This was it.
If the line's okay and you have those weapons, it all flows just fine.
Right.
And they've been that. And at times, they've been better than okay. And, you know, you look, and I sort of, I did this as a little bit of an exercise just to see for myself. You look at some of the critical numbers that really correlate to winning and you want to see from your offense. Take out the first 2 weeks where we know Burrow was trying to figure out his knee, mobility, mm-hmm, wasn't really scared. You know, basically everything after he called the audible for himself in Pittsburgh and did the Joe Mixon celebration. Right. And they have been top 10 in almost every important stat, including seventh in points per drive, first in yards per attempt. I mean, they, you know, they have done everything you wanted them to be these last 5 weeks since they kind of got a feel for Burrow and obviously Chase continuing to develop. And so now you have a top 10 defense, a top 10 offense, and a top 10 special teams.
Yeah.
There's just not teams that can say that.
No.
There aren't.
No. And you mentioned a top 10 defense. We have to talk about them, and we will when we come back. 29 minutes after 3 o'clock. He's Paul Daner Jr. here till 4. At Mo Egger is how you reach me on Twitter. At Paul Daner Jr. is how you hit him on Twitter. You can read his work, theathletic.com. Hear that podcast growling is out. Paul and Jay Morrison on all things Bengals in the aftermath of a blowout win against Baltimore. 29 minutes after 3, this is ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. Sports Update is a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of Lifetime Powertrain Protection and Guarantee. Credit approval from their family, the Earth for Life, KelseyChev.com. Are there any sports headlines tonight? Or right now, Taryn? Game 1 of the World Series is airing on ESPN 1530. Games 1 and 2. The first two games of the World Series will air on ESPN 1530. I think maybe we're joining Game 7 in progress if it goes that far. Got a lot of stuff we got to carry. We got Kentucky basketball exhibition games. FC Cincinnati's still playing in like the longest season ever. So we have a lot of commitments. But Game 1 of the World Series after the Scott Satterfield radio show tonight on ESPN 1530. Bengals are off. This is the day that you say crap like, the coaches are game planning for them. Yeah. You'll hear Luke Fickell coming up at 420. 513-749-1530 is our phone number for later on. A couple of things. We've talked about a game that involved Lamar Jackson for 30 minutes, and we have barely mentioned a defense that you talk about recalibrating expectations. Before the season started, most of us were like, well, if they can finish somewhere middle of the pack, boy, this thing can take off. Right now, that feels like the floor.
Yeah, there's no reason to think things will change dramatically with them, barring injury. And I do think we need to prepare ourselves for the fact that there's going to be attrition on this roster at some point. And the roster depth for this team has not really been tested yet.
But, you know, go back to 2015. Middle of the season, I remember reading the injury report, and there were no guys on it. And it was important that year, as much as nobody wants to revisit the end. You got to take care of business while you're healthy, because one day you won't be.
Yes.
And then Andy Dalton got hurt. But one day you're not going to be as healthy as you are right now. Win the games while you're healthy. The health determines so many different things in this league and in sports. You have to take advantage while you have it, and the Bengals do.
There is no doubt. I used to do this almost every year, especially recently when they were having so much problem with injuries, where you would go in the offseason and look at the teams that go from bottom of the league to the top of the league year over year, and you could almost always find a direct correlation to injury luck. Mm-hmm. It's just like, look, bad injury luck one year to good injury luck the next year is the difference of, you know, 3 to 4 wins oftentimes, and mm-hmm. especially in a league that's so beat up like this one has been this year. And so, you know, you're right. You have to think about who they are and the fact that, look, they just have all the elements you need of great defensive play, rush and cover. Trey Hendrickson is one of the best edge rushers in football. Their defensive interior continues to be great. Nnamdi Ogunjobi doesn't get enough love. Chinoue Awuzie has been a legit number one. Mm-hmm. Mike Hill, I mean, they've all filled in. Even Eli Apple has started playing well.
Yes, he has.
I mean, you got to say,
made fun of Eli Apple a lot early in the season.
And he has got it together and started playing well. And you just, there's not a lot of holes there. And I said, you know, honestly, there should probably be a receiving line of people paying apologies to Lou Anarumo at this point. Mm-hmm. I would be in that. I mean, I didn't see this coming. I didn't see a path to him returning last year. I didn't think that it would happen or that it was the right move, but it has, like many things that they've done, absolutely proven to be. The continuity has been a big part of their success, despite even the new pieces. And all that has worked out. I just, to me, when people talk about the surprise, that's the surprise.
Yes, yes.
Like this defense becoming this thing is absolutely the surprise, just because this was the thing that was totally almost unforeseeable.
Mm-hmm. Being good. Not being better.
Being top five?
Right. I think we thought defensively, if they stayed healthy, they would be better.
Sure.
But being a reason why they're winning games, the roadmap to a successful season included winning often in spite of your defense. That hasn't been the case this year. And I'm not sure as long as they remain intact, it's ever going to be the case.
There's no reason to think. Again, it goes back to what we were saying at the beginning about the game as a whole. There's nothing fluky about what they're doing.
Yeah.
Not when you do it every week, for the most part. I mean, for the most part, you allow play here or there because it's the NFL. But every week, they do better at shutting the other team down than they typically have done it against other teams. And they do all the things that are important to winning outside of maybe getting a few more turnovers at this point. And it's like, you know, the one other thing, and I'll just kind of go on a little tangent on this, is if, and I may write this, but if you go back and do a story and you really look at, let's look at the 6 to 7 critical offseason decisions that we debated hard for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
They've won all of them.
Yeah.
That goes all the way back to keep Zach Taylor and Lou Anarumo,
mm-hmm.
to Chase Versul, obviously, to Trey Hendrickson and Carl Lawson, to other draft pick situation that taking a kicker or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You want to go in there, you know, and to William Jackson walking.
Jackson Carmen.
All of this stuff that we spent forever debating, and a lot of people pretty adamantly claiming that they had screwed it up and botched it again, they've been proven right in pretty much everyone. And that happens when you have success like this. You have a lot of stories
sure.
like that.
Yeah.
But it's across the board. And I think when we start talking about who to give kudos to and discuss enough, the front office kind of standing by what they believed in and what they felt like needed to be right, and Zach Taylor and Duke Tobin and them, who have, Lord knows, caught a ton of heat.
Yeah.
You got to also go the other way when it all kind of pans out and they're proven correct, because in free agency and in the draft, a lot of big decisions were made, and they've been proven to make the right ones across the board.
I was texting with somebody in the waning moments of Sunday's game, and the text I got was like, you know, the story is Zach Taylor has shut people up about his play calling. And to a degree, that is true. But I said, to me, the bigger story, not to take anything away from Zach, to me, the bigger story is Duke Tobin nailed this offseason and has built, quietly, a damn good roster. Because a lot of what they did was hotly debated. Folks wondered, Trey Hendrickson, was he a one-year wonder that put up a bunch of sack numbers in a defense that was conducive to doing so? Well, hey, you just let William Jackson III go away, and now you're replacing him with some guys who are sort of on the all-whole, yeah, that guy's still in the NFL league, you know, team. What they chose to do in the draft, not just the approach Chase versus Sewell, but Jackson Carmen, who has played fine when he finally got a chance to play. The McPherson decision, letting Carl Lawson walk, and unfortunately Carl's not playing because he's hurt. The decisions they've made in free agency to overpay in certain spots. DJ Reader, that was a contract that people were like, yeah, okay, is he worth that kind of money? Well, to this team, the answer has been yes. I mean, they have built, you know, again, they're not a finished product, but where are the holes in this roster? They've built a pretty airtight 53. I mean, they really have built a pretty airtight unit that there aren't many holes. And it feels like, to a degree, that occurred almost overnight. Because coming into the season, we said, all right, quarterback's going to be pretty good. Wide receivers have a chance to be pretty special. Where are the strengths? And now, where are the weaknesses?
Yeah.
And that's happened very, very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I still think, you know, you've still got the line needing, the offensive line is still probably, if you're talking about
it. Needs help,
it. Yeah.
But it's not bad.
Yeah, no, it's not what it was.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been more than enough. And you can't be perfect everywhere. You obviously hope to be, but I think you're right. And so much of it goes back to, you know, what we've talked about a lot this offseason was this team was so hard to predict because you just didn't know what we missed. We missed a step last year.
Because
mm-hmm. when Burrow goes out, the whole thing's a wash. And you missed a critical step in seeing where this team was at in their developmental process and the rebuild. And what we probably can look back pretty confidently now and say is if Burrow stays healthy last year, we would have seen them take half the step.
Mm-hmm.
We would have seen a team that would have probably won three or four games, a couple more games down the stretch that would have really made you foresee this more. But that was behind the curtain.
Yeah.
It was just because of that, none of us got to really see where they were at, and it all just sort of opened up this year to, okay, here's where you're at, and it's the best-case scenario that everything has fallen into place. But, you know, there's a lot of chances for them to make missteps this offseason, and they just didn't. And also, I do think you've got to give time for these drafts to happen before you scream bust, and we certainly know that, and I think a lot of people
learned
it the hard way.
You mean a couple of preseason games?
Right.
You should maybe wait for a guy to play a regular season game first.
Absolutely, and I would say this about the 2020 draft class as well, mm-hmm. for people that were, you know, and I think uninspired by, you know, the linebackers last year and a lot of the guys involved in that. You give it time, and all of a sudden now you see a couple of draft classes that have stacked together mm-hmm. to be cornerstones. Mm-hmm. The draft classes that we talk about when we talk with the reverence of the way they built the roster in 10 and 11. And, you know, that's it's game-changing stuff. And we saw in 10 and 11 what happens next. Windows.
Yeah.
Big, gaping windows to win, especially when you have a rookie quarterback contract in today's league.
All right, let's talk about what looms for the Bengals and the entire league in 1 week. And then I need your Brady Ball take.
I got one now.
All right, good, because I explained it to you.
Yeah, I needed a little
more. You haven't
been
all in on Brady Ball as much as everybody else.
We've been a bit in the weeds. I was in the Baltimore airport yesterday all day pretty much. So
that doesn't sound much fun.
It's not. I think I'd rather have been talking about the Brady Ball.
I'll give you that chance in a few minutes. 14 away from 4 o'clock. This is ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. 9 away from 4, ESPN 1530. Another few minutes with our buddy Paul Danner Jr. Bengals and the NFL's trade deadline is in a week. Do you expect this around the league to be a busy trade deadline? We've had more trades in the NFL in recent years than we used to have. We just had one with Joe Flacco. He's been traded to the Jets. So
big news.
Huge. Do you expect this to be a busy time of year in terms of player swapping teams?
I don't. I mean, I don't see a ton of opportunity for. Usually, there's obvious big names and the Deshaun Watson things hanging out there, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think for the most part, there's not a lot of obvious opportunity out there, and I don't know how many teams are in the burn-it-down situation, clearly, like we've seen in past years, which a lot of deals have come from. The Dolphins had a blow-up a couple years ago, and many would argue the Bengals should have had one the same time. And there, I don't see a lot of that potentially happening, which is usually the impetus behind a busy quote-unquote trade deadline. Mm-hmm. So for that fact, I don't know that there will be, and there may be some. It's always possible, but I don't see too many big names really hanging out there, because usually you have a pretty good feel for players that might get unloaded, and there's just not a lot of that swimming around right now.
There are folks who will just assume that the Bengals won't do anything at the trade deadline because this is, quote, what they've never done. Do you believe, given where they are open to making their team better for the purposes of winning something big in 2021?
I'd be surprised by that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've done things differently in the last couple of years in general, but this is one that is never really connected, especially when it comes to building into the window we just talked about before the break, and understanding that the value in every pick and the value in roster depth this year, they feel like is going to be a bigger deal than going and bringing somebody in from the outside that might tinker with whatever the perfect chemistry is that you feel like you've put together with this team inside of the locker room. So it doesn't feel like the year that they do. I mean, you know, last year you had the Carlos trade for nothing. Yeah. I don't even know that I count that. It was such a different situation. Like, it had nothing to do with the fact that it was the trade deadline. It only had to do with the fact that it was this had happened in the season and it had to be addition by subtraction. But it doesn't really seem like something that I would see happening. I think they feel like they have everything going in the right direction and have enough people in-house to go win now, and that will be enough, and keep whatever assets for the future that they have. You know, I was asked this to do something on the trade deadline for, you know, every team in The Athletic, and I had to come up with something.
I'm looking at it right now.
Darius Phillips was the only name that came to mind. Because he's kind of just become this afterthought, and somewhere somebody looks at his play and his PFF grades, or somebody looks at it and says, I don't know, this guy makes a lot of plays on the ball when he's out there. He's really fallen out of favor in Cincinnati. Maybe they just brought in, you know, they got like Trey Flowers here now or whatever. Right. And like maybe there's something that can be had for that, and maybe they find that, you know. But that's kind of, to me, was more of a stretch of if I have to come up with something, yeah, that would be the one.
Right. Very good. Well, in the offseason, you wanted to trade Joe Burrow. So I'm glad you've.
That's right. I forgot about that.
You've come off of that just a little bit. What would you have done with Tom Brady's 600th touchdown ball?
Here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference between standing on the street and Tom Brady hits you with his car? Okay. And you're like, I can either, and you feel fine. It right. was just an accident.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay. I there's nothing wrong with me. Or my neck. My back.
But a lot of us would just think it was cool that Tom Brady was the guy that hit you.
Right. And don't you think it's cool that you were the one in the middle of for a minute you had Tom Brady's 600th ball?
Yeah, but here's the thing. Getting hit by the car, if you're going to pursue that, that involves litigation. Courtrooms, a judge. No, that does not worth the hassle. This doesn't involve such things. Now, I think the guy is getting greedy where it's like, all right, he's been given a Bitcoin. I will admit to being completely naive when it comes to the world of cryptocurrency. And whenever I say that, I'm flooded with people who are like, dude, I'm not doing that now. I can barely wrap my brain around how to use real currency, much less crypto. So, I don't know a lot about that world, but so Brady's given him a Bitcoin, which is worth apparently like
$63,000, apparently.
Right. So he's gotten some signed helmets and jerseys. He's been given season tickets for the rest of this year and for next. But he has said he wants to play golf with Tom Brady. That's a bit much.
Yeah. Now we're talking time.
Now we're talking 4 hours plus. Like Brady is going to have to take some rando to a course. And this, you know, maybe the guy's as good of a golfer as I am, and so he has no business being on a track like this. That's like 4 hours. I don't play golf with strangers because that just, it's weird.
Yeah.
Now you're making Tom Brady, one of the world's most famous people, he's got to play with some random dude.
Putt-putt?
I would go to General Custard's and play putt.
I think that's it.
Yeah, I would do that.
I think that's the move. I'd say, let's meet in the middle here, and I'll do one round of putt-putt with you, and then we'll call it a day.
The ball is in your hands. Mike Evans gives you the ball. If you realize in that moment it's touchdown number 600, are you giving the ball back to Tom Brady?
Yes.
No questions.
No
questions. Not going to ask for a thing in return.
He did that. I didn't do anything but happen to be here. I don't want that's his ball. It's his achievement. Yeah. I'm not here to exploit it.
That sounds nice.
Yeah.
That sounds nice in theory. In practice, I've got this in my hands. And I'm starting to realize the potential that this ball could unlock. I don't know. Like I've said, I would give him the ball. But I don't blame anybody for, hey, this is my shot. This is my shot to change my life. And I would like to think that I would be the guy that would be like, oh, yeah, give Tom the ball. But it's a chance maybe to change my life. I'm not saying that that's exactly what I would do.
Well, I mean, maybe this round of mini golf will change this guy's life still. Good things come to you when you do nice
Here's
stuff
the thing
like
about
that.
About the round of golf, you go and you play golf with Tom Brady. Now, post round beers, lunch, like it turns into a day, man.
You'd hope for a lunch.
Yeah. So now, it's time, right? Time is valuable, and if you're Tom Brady, your time's really valuable, especially because you don't want to hang out with some random dude, and they got to take him to your nicest course, got to play 18 with him. Who knows how good the guy is?
You know what you do?
Yeah.
You make Mike Evans do it. I mean, it's his fault.
Uh-huh.
He's the one that threw the ball in the stands when he shouldn't have.
Right. So make him tag along for the round?
No, he has to do the round.
He has to do the round, Tom.
You're like, look, you can't get Brady, but Evans will come play with you and take you to lunch and a post-game pop.
It's like an eight-hour day.
Mike Evans shouldn't have thrown that ball in.
I'm with you there.
And Mike will do whatever Tom tells him.
Well, yes, he should. And I guess did. But And now, like moving forward, every ball that Tom Brady throws for a touchdown is a new record-setting touchdown ball. If you're on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you have to be very cognizant moving forward of what happens with balls Tom Brady throws you that result in touchdowns.
I have a feeling they're going to hold them still with two hands and run them directly to Tom or the equipment guy.
Here you go, Tom.
Yeah. Nobody. I don't want to be in some round of golf like Mike Evans is. All right. I need to make sure this ball gets where it goes.
That would be a tough punishment. Now you got to go play golf with some random guy. And I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't think Tom's going to go for that. I'll be interested to see if the round of golf occurs.
My guess is no.
Yeah, my guess is
no. My guess is Tom Brady. Like,
this is enough.
Yeah, I got you jerseys.
I got you Bitcoin.
Now, the season tickets, I said I would hold out for at least two expense-paid roadies, warm weather cities, one game in a suite.
That's fair.
Yeah.
And then the thing is, leverage is all gone. They have the ball.
You
got nothing
you
can do.
On the Manning cast last night. It's like, dude, I had no leverage. What does he want?
Yeah.
But I would just, yeah, that's what I would have asked for.
Yeah.
All right. We have to go.
Sorry.
We'll see you next week.
Yeah.